Craig Hoffman.
If you just try to pick something off of the entire Cheesecake Factory menu, you're screwed. Second and seven is chicken. Okay, three wide receivers, one tight end. Okay, and now it's chicken and rice. And like, yes, all of a sudden, you're at like three dishes.
The Hoffman Show.
That is the best analogy I've ever heard.
On the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
What's up? What's happening? What's up? Check, check. Check, check. One, two, three. What's up? What's happening? On a Monday, it's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Streaming live if you'd like to catch us on YouTube as well at the Team 980. Shout out to Metal Chris on the ones and twos today. Anthony out sick. And if you're listening, feel better. Also, go take a nap. Just kidding. You have your medicine now. So hopefully Anthony will be back tomorrow feeling a lot better. Get your flu shots, kids. Stuff's going around. We need everybody reporting for duty. We need all hands on deck. And what you need right now to get started here on a Monday, a Tell the Truth Monday, is a breakdown of the old Commanders-Ravens game. And that's what we got for you, first and 10 style.
It's time to get the breakdown started. First up, 10 observations.
Put it right on the ground.
It's first and 10.
Number one, the largest takeaway from that game is that this was, this 30-23 loss for the Commanders, a good performance by a good team that got beat by a very good performance by an excellent team. The Baltimore Ravens are really good. More on that later. But when soup, you know, soup to nuts, when push comes to shove, whatever the analogy is, the game comes down to a few key plays, specifically third downs on defense for Washington, where their better receivers, as in Zay Flowers, beat Washington's average in Benjamin St. Juice's case, or emerging corners like Mike Sanders still. And that also is enhanced by the fact on two of those key, and I'm talking very key third downs. One is the play before a touchdown, and the other is when they needed to stop late. They come on PIs on St. Juice that are bad calls. The one in the red zone, not a good call. I understand why they called it if the ref has a bad angle, but realistically, that wasn't enough for a PI. And the second one where the dude just falls down, it's like, yeah, St. Juice's hands were on him as he went down because he was falling, tripping over his own feet, falling into St. Juice's knees. It's not Benjamin's job to get out of the way when the dude trips over the ground. Like, it's a ridiculous call. And so, ultimately, if you're telling me that's the difference in the game, is a couple of key stops, some of which Washington obviously needs to play better at. But also, Baltimore puts you in really tough spots. They put you in tough spots with how much grass you have to defend because of Lamar's ability to run, Lamar's ability to throw to all areas of the field, Derrick Henry, some of the very specific things that they, and I'm talking only they, can do. Like, some of the runs that they get, they get you in a condensed formation. Everyone's super tight to the line of scrimmage. It feels like there's, you know, 20 guys in between the numbers. And then they run to the edge, and it's a foot race. And even if you get there at the same time they do, one dude you're trying to bring down is Derrick Henry, and the other guy that you're racing is Patrick Ricard, a 300-pound fullback who runs, I mean, faster than the linebackers, faster, like a DB. Like, he's out there and he's killing people, so they can get to the edge without having anybody out there to block when they say set hut. Like, the kind of stuff that they can do in the run game is literally only Baltimore can do that. And it's because of Lamar. It's because of Ricard. I mean, Daniel Falalele is a 6'8", 380-pound right guard. And there are some one-on-one blocks that he's able to stick because he's 6'8", 380, that there ain't a lot of guards in the league that can do. It just allows you to do certain stuff. Like, there is a play where Fedarian Mathis, Big Phil, 350 pounds, like, he does a good job to stand Falalele up, but he can't get anywhere. The dude he's trying to get around has got an angle on him, and he's 6'8", 680. Or, sorry, 6'8", 680 would be a big, that's a big dude. 6'8", 380. Like, sometimes you get beat by better dudes, and Baltimore's got better dudes. And if I had told you that they were going to be competitive, you know, in this game in the middle of June, I think people would be pretty psyched about it. And realistically, they were competitive. They needed a stop at the end. They couldn't get it. The Commanders certainly do not play perfectly. They are not above reproach. We're going to get into a lot more detail over the next couple of days on things they could have done better, certain coverage decisions. I think Joe Witt's got some stuff he's going to want back. Cliff, Jaden, receivers, running backs, O-line, D-line, everybody. But over the course of that game, there wasn't a lot of separation between those two teams, as evidenced by the fact that it ultimately was a 30-23 one-score game. Sorry, that one score was 7 instead of 6 or 3. If perhaps you were invested in this one more than emotionally, that 6.5 line, that one hurt. But they legitimately competed with the Baltimore Ravens, and the difference at the end of the day was talent. They weren't going to fix that going into Sunday, but they will learn from it and fix it more so going forward. And I think that is genuinely exciting. So, biggest takeaway, they lost to a better team, and they competed with them. That ain't bad.
Number two.
And the reason that ain't bad, and the reason that's actually really encouraging, is because the reason why they were able to do that, and that is their quarterback. If Jaden Daniels is playing, the Washington Commanders have a chance to win. It does not matter the team that they are playing against. You haven't been able to say that about any quarterback with this franchise forever. Like, maybe since Sonny was playing, with all due respect to, like, Theismann and Rippon and Doug and, I mean, Kirk, Robert, at the best that they were playing. Like, so much of the success that this team has had in its franchise history, including its Super Bowls, was they had a tremendous roster depth all around. And it's just, there's nothing wrong with that. There's a lot right with that. 3 Super Bowl trophies, to be in fact. But, like, the Hogs, some of the guys they had on defense. Obviously, D Green's number going up into the rafters this weekend. He was around for all of that. So, like, there's just so many great players in this franchise's history, and so few of them, for sustained success purposes, are quarterbacks. And I guess Robert in 2012, for sure, there was a part of that, but also, like, Alfred Morris and that O-line were great. That defense was hitting people with, Fletch in the middle and some of the guys they had to spread throughout. Obviously, Kirk had an unbelievable run at the end of 2015 on the way to the division title, but never have they had a guy like this. And at least, certainly since I've been covering the team, and I would say going all the way back, I don't know enough about what this team looked like in Sonny's era, but I know Sonny's in the Hall of Fame, so I'm gonna say probably Sonny counts. But like anytime you're talking about Washington quarterbacks and you say, well, it's the first time since Sonny Jurgensen, you get the freaking point. Yesterday was yet another step in his growth because of the things he didn't have going for him and the way he was able to overcome them. On 11 called runs yesterday by their running backs, 2 were successful. Success defined by success rate, the NFL stat that I don't know whether it's their stat or whoever keeps it, but you got to get 5 yards on first down, half the distance on second down. So if it's 2nd and 8, you have to get at least 4. 3rd down, whatever you need to get the first down. Those are considered successful plays. On 2 of 11 runs, they were successful. And by success rate, Jaden Daniels was 50% on his dropbacks. So they have no running game. He himself is not successful yesterday as a runner. And he still is over 50% success rate, getting the job done on what he needs to do on over 50% of his snaps against a defense that was really good. And by the way, that 50% includes quote-unquote unsuccessful dropbacks, such as some checkdowns that were against free blitzers, and Baltimore makes good tackles in space, but it's the right decision. He did what he needed to do. There is the dirt ball to Austin Eckler, which is 100% the correct decision in the 2-minute. That's on the unsuccessful side of things because that's how the stat works, but he still was able to, like, that is the correct play. That is going to grade out way better than 50%. He has that 50% success rate, including some monster plays to Terry McLaurin, even though Terry has only 1.6 average yards of separation according to Next Gen Stats. He was like, it's Terry. I know I'm supposed to throw here. I'm going to do it anyway. And Terry made a whole bunch of plays. It included throws at all 3 levels of the defense. No huge deep shots, 50-yard bombs yesterday, but he had one or two deeper to stretch the defense a little bit. He had one bigger completion. He was over the middle of the field more yesterday, 7 of 9 over the middle of the field, according to Next Gen Stats. So there's just continued growth from him as a passer, and as teams ask him to do different stuff. And not every team, by the way, is going to be able to do what Baltimore did to them in terms of shutting down the run, having the speed and the players and the know-how to shut Jaden down as a runner, the discipline to lock him in terms of the rush lanes from escaping as a scrambler. Like, not everybody can do that. In fact, most teams are not going to be able to do that. And he still found ways to be good. He still found ways to get them competitive. And ask yourself this question. If they have been able to get a stop at the end of that game and Jaden gets the ball back, do you think that game goes to overtime? Whether it does or not is kind of irrelevant. The fact that you just went, yes, I do, because I believe in that guy's ability to make plays that much, is the point. When was the last time you felt like that? If you're a Washington football fan, some of you, it's never, depending on how old you are. Simply put, Jaden Daniels is a top 10 NFL quarterback right now, based off of everything that he's done this season and the trajectory that he's on. Again, will it be smooth always? Has he figured the NFL out to the point that he's never going to have a bad game in his entire career? Of course not. That would be ridiculous. However, top 10 quarterbacks have bad games, and I wouldn't take 10 dudes. I don't know, like, if we're going futures contracts, I don't know, I'm taking 5 dudes. I don't know how many dudes I'm taking over this guy right now. He is that good.
Number 3.
With that said, one of the dudes that I would take over him right now for this season, I don't know about moving forward, but certainly for this season, plays on the other side. Lamar Jackson is so freaking good that he is a 2-time MVP, widely considered one of the best in the league, and I think he might still be underrated. Part of that is he's had some bad games slash rough moments in playoffs, and that matters. You know, when you go in against Patrick Mahomes and he beats you, like, everyone's like, ah, that guy's, how good is he? It's like, well, Mahomes is on the potential GOAT track, so, like, not being as good as Patrick Mahomes doesn't mean that you're not awesome. Lamar not only is so gifted physically and some of the throws he makes yesterday, from off-platform stuff to the way he leads his receivers, some of those Zay Flowers catches are because Lamar has perfect ball placement and he leads him. A lot of quarterbacks make that receiver slow down a little bit, and if he slows down, like BSJ and Saint Ristil and Igbinogene, like, they can make plays. It's because, you know, Lamar puts the ball out in front and Zay Flowers doesn't even have to slow down, so he's able to maintain the separation that he earned at the top of his route. There's so much of that stuff, but also I think one of the differences right now between Lamar and Jaden, and this gap is going to close tremendously because Jaden just doesn't have the file that Lamar has. Lamar got them in so many good plays. Logan talked about it on our Take Command post game last night. Lamar's ability to check into the right play, especially considering some of the looks that they get routinely because of the way they line up and the formations, like, Todd Monken's really, really good at his job, Baltimore's OC. So many of their big plays were ones that he checked into. And that mental game, Jaden does it actually really well, like, ridiculously well as a rookie. But to be able to do it snap in, snap out with the consistency Lamar does is just a different level, and especially when you're as good post-snap as he is. He is super duper super duper special, and then he's surrounded by a bunch of other guys that are really good. Zay Flowers is an excellent player, excellent player. Some of their linemen, you know, Ricard is such a weapon for them as a fullback. Obviously, Derrick Henry is just a marvel of a running back in 2024. I don't think he's going to wind up being the last Hall of Fame running back, but he might be the last one for a while. Like, there'll be someone that emerges, but, like, let's realize how rare Derrick Henry is as a weapon in the modern NFL game, and the fact that he is worth giving the ball to the way that they give it to him. So, ultimately, like, Baltimore is really good. In fact, Baltimore is a great team, and they're playing really well. Their own line has come together. And to say anything else about the Commanders, which, of course, we'll have 6 more bullet points coming up next about Washington, but to go any further talking about this game without the context of just how good Baltimore is to not give it to you straight. And I realize on, you know, Misery Monday after a loss, you might just want to hear everybody sucks and someone needs to get fired. That's not this show. This show is going to try to give you the reality of the context of what just happened. And the reality is the Washington Commanders lost to a team that has built up a tremendous, tremendous side over the course of years from an identity, a talent, and everything. And they played a really good game that not many teams in the league could compete with, which Washington did nevertheless beat yesterday. All right, quick break. We come back for the back half of our first and 10 next. It's the Hoffman Show on the Team 980 and always live on the free Odyssey app. It's Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app and streaming live on YouTube at the Team 980 as well. All right, let's pick up our first and 10. Roll through the last half of this, starting with
number four.
I want to talk about Benjamin St. Juice, and I'm probably going to spend a little bit more time on this, and then we'll roll as quick as we can through the rest of it, and then we'll take your phone calls on a Tell the Truth Monday. But people are crushing Benjamin St. Juice today, and I think it's completely and utterly unfair because he did not have his best game. That is for sure. He did not play a perfect game. That is for sure. I don't even know that I would say he played a good game. I think he played an okay game. He was somewhat sticky in a lot of coverage situations. He got a couple of times. All of those times were he's playing man-to-man coverage in a ton of space, and Baltimore blocks a bunch of stuff up. He's got to cover for a long time. He's got to chase guys across the field with no help, but he gives up the right thing. Like, you can't cover everything. You can't play one-on-one in a full NFL field full of space against NFL wide receivers. Like, it's an impossible ask. And so when he's doing that stuff, he's able to stay close enough to make tackles. He's coming off of his guys and making physical tackles in other situations. He plays with a mentality and intent and a physicality that says, like, you can play for Dan Quinn, you can play for Adam Peters, and shoot, you can play for me any given day mentality-wise. The two biggest plays that he gives up are the pass interference penalties, and I don't think either of them are good calls. And I can't get on the radio and crush a guy for doing exactly what he's supposed to do. What is he like? He plays perfect coverage. I would say it's pretty perfect coverage. Maybe you could teach something. Maybe a referee would be like, no, you can't do that. But like, there's no grab on the one in the red zone. The play before Henry walks it in for the touchdown. Like, it is, he's on one hip. He comes around and swipes across. The ball is nowhere to be found near Zay Flowers. Flowers doesn't make any extraordinary attempt to get it. He just looks around and hopes that, the fact that St. Juice jumped around him can get a flag. But there's no real pull. There's no real tug. There's no sustained anything. It's a bad call. Straight up, it's a bad call. I understand why the ref made it, because that motion often comes with a hook, comes with a tug, but there wasn't one. And your job as a referee is to be right. And then on the second one, in the second half, like, the dude just falls down into BSJ's knees, and Benjamin puts his hands on him as he goes down so that the dude doesn't roll up and hyperextend into it, or roll into Benjamin's knee and hyperextend it. It's a human reaction to a dude who tripped over the ground and fell into your legs. That's not PI. And both of those are on third downs. It costs the Commanders double-digit points if they're just called correctly. And if those two are called correctly, aka no calls, none of y'all are mad at BSJ today. You're like, dang, he gave up a couple, but those are tough. Where's the pass rush? Why didn't he get home? Why is Benjamin St. Juice being asked to cover a guy like Zay Flowers? That is not his ideal matchup. The reality is, the problem is the corner who wasn't on the field yesterday. And I'm not going to sit here and crush Emmanuel Forbes, because I'm not at practice. I don't know what's going on there. But, like, it really, I would like, you know, we can go back and crush Ron Rivera. I saw his name trending on Twitter today. I imagine this is why. You can't draft a dude to be your number one corner and have him a healthy scratch in year two. Roster building does not work that way. And people say, oh, they should have been more aggressive because Forbes wasn't good last season. Why did they think they could get something out of him? They should have signed Stephon Gilmore. Takes two to tango. I don't know that Gilmore wanted to play here. I think a lot of the number one type corners are older, that were available, were older guys who wanted to go to contenders. And while the Commanders have turned into one, nobody thought they would be. And that seemed like a reasonable expectation in the offseason. Maybe if things go right, they'll be around 500. No, they're legit. And I'm sure some of those guys maybe wish they had signed here instead of wherever they wound up. But realistically, like, there wasn't a lot of options. You couldn't draft a number one corner in the draft because you'd used your number one overall pick on a quarterback, Jaden Daniels. That's turning out well. And when you have what you have right now with Washington, it is impossible not to have holes in your roster. And what I mean by that is when your last 1, 2, 3, 4 first round picks are not contributing for you, you are going to be missing really important players at positions. And at edge, Chase Young and now Jamin Davis. Both guys, not helpful. There's two. Wide receiver, they could use a really good wide receiver too. Well, Jahan Dotson, they shipped him off to Philly because he wasn't it. And it's all he's done is go to Philly and do a whole lot of nothing. And then corner, if you had a good corner, you'd be in a completely different place defensively. But Forbes has been a bust. That's not on this group. And it is just a reality that we're going to have to deal with when it comes to this, that Benjamin St. Juice deserves credit and applause for being willing to go out there and compete his ass off, knowing, like, I mean, sure, he doesn't go to bed every night being like, well, I'm a number two corner. Like, he's out there trying. It's not his fault. And he really didn't play that poorly yesterday. A lot of bad results happened. With him involved. But I'm not blaming him for bad calls. And I'm not blaming him for pass rush not getting home and blitzes not getting home. And if he had then missed tackles on some of those crossers, okay, fine. He didn't. He made the play the best he could. And I understand the frustration. Just, I would direct that frustration at Ron Rivera every time he shows up on your television, at Emmanuel Forbes if you really want to, if you want to at Adam Peters, although I don't think that he really could have done anything, and whatever's left, if you want to direct it at St. Juice, fine, but I don't think it's BSJ's fault. That's my Benjamin St. Juice rant, because it's also the inhumane vitriol and some of the things that people say that's just completely, if you don't like him as a football player, fine. Be like, dang, that I really, hey, I'm tired of watching him. Okay, fine. Do that. Some of the language that gets used online, especially about a guy where it's not his fault, that bothers me on a human level, and it's unnecessary. All right.
Number five.
The rest of the secondary, there were more busts in this game than we've seen probably the previous three combined. They had a couple of miscommunications. I think a huge part of that is there was a ton of space on the second level because Baltimore's play action game is so good. Suck the linebackers up. There's a ton of space. Guys are confused as to where they need to be. There was miscommunication in the red zone on the touchdown to Andrews. It was either Butler needs to cover over, Bobby Wagner needs to cover the seam, or Quan Martin needs to not get distracted by the corner route. Depends on what the call was. I put this one up on Twitter at Craig Hoffman if you want to go take a look in more detail. But all in all, like, Baltimore puts your offense or your defense in a ton of conflict, and they did a really good job of that. And as a result, Washington had more issues with some free runners and guys in space and things like that than they have in probably the previous 3 weeks combined. And I would say that's ultimately fine moving forward because they're not going to face an offense as good as Baltimore's for a while. Big news of the day today.
Number six.
John Allen. I am so bummed for John. If you're just tuning in, breaking news about an hour ago, it was reported and then confirmed by the team moments later that John Allen is out for the season with a torn pectoral muscle. He started to jump off the tape a lot more the last 2 weeks specifically. He's starting to make a ton of plays. He's starting to shed blocks violently. He's starting to get in the backfield. He's chasing things down. Like, he looked like a lot closer to Pro Bowl John Allen the last couple of weeks. And I know some of the productivity wasn't there as much. And this game, he's got a couple of tackles before he exited. He probably had a 5-6 tackle game with the pace he was on. But he's starting to get sacks, tackles for loss, all that stuff. They're going to miss him. I think the good news is Johnny Newton has played well and is probably ready for a little bit more. But John's institutional knowledge and know-how, nevertheless, the leadership and the other things he provides, it's definitely going to be missed. And I feel just absolutely terrible for John.
Number seven.
Got to point it out, though. I hate this, but John might have just played his last snap as a Commander. We'll explore that a little bit later on in the show because we're way behind on time. But with the way the contract is, he is it's very easy to move on. And I think you can make a really good argument to spend that money somewhere else. So what they do with him moving forward is going to be fascinating. We'll detail that a little bit later in the show.
Number eight.
Cliff Kingsbury. Players, not plays. Something that I love about Cliff is in mega situations, he's like, all right, who do I want to get the ball to and how do I want to get him the ball? And his ability to scheme up, goes and comebacks, throws that Jaden likes in situations where Romo on the broadcast is like, oh, that's going to be a slant. And instead, it's a hitch. Why? Because Jaden likes throwing hitches, not slants, or hitches more than slants. His ability to get Terry isolated or Terry in a good route concept and make him the primary. It's something that for years I have just been mystified at offensive coordinators here not being able to do. Oh, it's this down and distance. We like this concept. Okay, well, make it so the guy that's good is going to be open. If you like the concept so much, enhance it by putting the right guys in the right spots. Cliff does that, especially in key situations, and I think that that is going to continue to bode well for this team moving forward.
Number nine.
I thought the situational football was pretty good yesterday. I know that there's some consternation about not going fast enough on that final drive that they had offensively. Look, I get it. A little bit faster would have been nice. The problem was getting the stop on defense. They scored with enough time that if they get a stop, they would get the ball back and they'd have enough time for a drive. The problem wasn't the time. The problem was the stop. And at the end of the first half, they managed that as well as you possibly could. They had, what, one timeout, not a whole lot to work with, needed to get some yardage. They do, and then Seibert, I don't know whether he missed or whether it got deflected. I don't know what the ultimate ruling on that was. But offensively, they did their job.
Number 10.
And then last but not least, Austin Seibert hit a couple long field goals yesterday, and he has been very spotty in his career above 50 yards, even frankly above 40 yards. So the fact that he can make those changes things moving forward for this team. And Dan Quinn, talking in the press conference today, said he wanted to prove to Austin, hey man, I got faith in you, especially after you missed that first one. And that is a big, big deal. I think they'd still like to keep him kicking mostly under 40 where he's perfect in his career, but if that opens up some possibilities, even though they are now 9-for-9 on fourth down on the year, it does allow for a little bit different play calling, a little bit different situational management if you can trust Seibert above 50 yards. All right, when we get back, because that is our first and 10, 10 observations to open the show. First, you know, we do them first, 10 of them, first and 10. Okay, now it's over. Now it's time for you. 301-230-0980. It's a Tell the Truth Monday. 301-230-0980. Your take on the games next. It's the offense show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We are streaming live on YouTube as well if you'd like at the Team 980. Our phone line is 301-230-0980. That's all the ways you can get in touch with us as we do this Tell the Truth Monday time.
Tell the Truth Monday on the Hoffman Show.
I think I'm entitled.
Call us now at 301-230-0980 to tell the truth about the Commanders. Or hit the comment section at the Team 980 on YouTube.
Let's get started with some calls. Let's get started with Reggie in D.C. Reggie, thanks for calling. You are on the Hoffman Show. What's your truth coming out of this Commanders loss to the Ravens?
Craig, you know what, man? Let me be honest with you. I was jilted when Ben Johnson didn't get off the plane and talk to us, right? And I'm like, man, like a retread. And you know what? Second, you know, we got the second choice. Or, you know, this is the quote, you know, like in my mind, this is a backup. This is a fallback plan. Man, I'm sick about this. Fast forward, looking the way we played against the best. Some people are calling this the best team in the NFL. I have to be truthful, man. I have never been this excited about the Skins since 91. And I go back in the days with my boys. I'm with the celebration with Mosley and Rippin, and I mean just going back. I cannot be. We played a heck of a game against one of the better. Again, it's no moral victories, but from a fan, I just wanted to see how we measure up, because every time as a fan you wear your rose-colored glasses. We played Miami last year, we got blew out. We played against Buffalo, we get blew out. San Francisco, it's not competitive. Dallas, it's not competitive. Every time we've matched up against an elite, or, you know, air quote, elite playoff caliber team, we get embarrassed. Now, with Dan Quinn. It seems like it. I don't know whether or not, you know, you're a little bit more close than me looking at it as a fan. But as a fan, it appears like this team is taking on its personality where we're going to fight.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to scratch. We're going to claw. So I feel like, to telling the truth, I have to literally almost apologize to the fan and me for doubting Quinn and saying that. Because, you know, you watched Ben Johnson yesterday with Detroit. You're like, man, he looked real kind of sexy.
He's real good at his job.
Sexy.
Yeah.
Yes, but we got but we look good with Cliff, though. You can't
for sure.
Cliff.
For sure. Yeah, and that's so the thing, like, Reggie, I'm going to let you run. I appreciate the call a ton. I think that it's a great call. We got a lot of folks to get to. Multiple people can be good at the job. Like, Ben Johnson might still be a great head coach. He might have been great here. I think Dan Quinn is the perfect guy to partner with Adam Peters. And I'll tell you this, one thing that I want to point out real quick, and then we'll get back to the phones, is the future is so bright if Peters is really this good. Because some of the best players on this team and some of the best players that, or I should say, the players that embody the stuff that helps you win the most, both from a skill and a mentality standpoint, are the rookies. And Jaden is the obvious, easy one. Johnny Newton's got a long way to go to like be a all-pro defensive tackle, but I have literally never seen a defensive tackle hustle like that dude. And by the way, I had someone tell me, one of the veteran linemen who'd been around playing for other teams, tell me that through all the years of him playing, all the years of him practicing, including against some really, really good defensive tackles, he had never played against someone who played in practice as hard as John Allen. And I'm telling you that watching the tape, Allen compared to Newton, dog. Like, again, Allen's the better player right now. Newton, in 5 years, what he can become with this kind of work ethic, oh my God. Sanders still, obviously, just tremendous growth week over week. Competitiveness. Luke getting, you know, some of the stuff that he does that's super subtle that, like, once they understand the NFL game and have more experience and they're a little more veteran, like, and they obviously will have other rookies underneath them that are continuing to push their level, and this team is going to eventually be built of, like, all Adam Peters draft picks pretty much. Man, the future is really bright. Nevertheless, what they're actually able to do right now, where they can go toe-to-toe for against a team like Baltimore. All right, we got a couple of calls still left. We were running late getting into the segment, so let's get back on track with the clock because clock management, it's important, kiddos. Quick look at what's trending. Come right back. We'll get right back to the calls on a Tell the Truth Monday. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Let's keep it rolling with the phone calls. 301-230-0980. 301-230-0980. It's a Tell the Truth Monday, so you tell us what you think about the Commanders after yesterday's game. In this case, a 30-23 loss to the Baltimore Ravens. Let's go to Marvin in Landover. Marvin, thanks for calling. You are on the Hoffman Show.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, Mr. Hoffman. It's been a while.
You've got it, Marvin.
Yeah, I'll tell you right now, I'm encouraged, but I'm also really still angry about the game itself. You said in the first segment, Benjamin St. Juice was asked to do the impossible, which was basically stand up to like a smaller, quicker wide receiver. And then they never got home with any of the blitzes. It was like they blitzed. The Baltimore kind of saw him coming, and they never even got closer to hitting the quarterback all day. So he had 3 seconds, 4 seconds for deep crossing routes. And it was just like that's a terrible, terrible thing that they put St. Juice through. I thought he played really well, you know, so I'm right there with you with that. What I do know the truth is their defense is definitely still a work in progress. You were absolutely right. About 2 months ago, I talked to you, and you said that it was going to take more than 1 year. And I was with you with that. Boy, it's going to take more than 1 year is the truth. They are, and every Ron Rivera pick, oh, my God, what did we do? Everything terrible. So we're really lost because you needed a corner who could cover, no corner. You needed a pass rusher who could hit the quarterback, no pass rusher. They were missing everywhere. Wide receiver would have been nice, but I think their offense still was really good. Cliff Kingsbury would have been better with Washington than Ben Johnson. He understands the mobile quarterback a little better, I don't know if Ben Johnson really understands it. Sometimes it's the message, not the messenger. And my fault, the messenger, not the message. And the messenger right now, Cliff Kingsbury, understands how to use Jaden better than I think Ben Johnson would have. So I'm still encouraged. I think we're maybe 11-win team this year. Maybe. I say that really hesitantly because I was thinking this is a build year. This is a build year. But they could probably get to 10 or 11 wins. So that's a playoff team. I think we hung with a really tough squad. I think we got jerked on a bunch of calls yesterday. You mentioned it, the St. Jude second one, which was in the third quarter, which was just awful. That was awful.
Yeah, it was really bad. There was a couple others that I had down that I was like, there's one that I haven't watched the second half back on the All 22 yet, but I have one marked from the game copy or the TV copy that Noah Brown, I thought, got yanked on one that they didn't call. So there's a bunch of stuff. But Marvin, appreciate the call. And yeah, I mean, I think that they've gotten a lot of stuff right. And, like, that's really encouraging. But at the end of the day, some of the gaps are the ones where they're just like, we can't do everything in one year, and we're going to take some flyers on some of these guys that contractually it makes sense to keep around, and some of them have panned out. Some of them haven't. I mean, Quan Martin's been good. He had some moments yesterday, I think. But he's largely been fantastic. He was their second-round pick last year. Like, that's Big Phil, I think, has had a pretty solid year. He's playing pretty consistent ball the last couple of weeks. Like, there's a lot. There are some guys around that they have been able to kind of pull out of the trenches. Just, it's not, you can't save everyone, which is why they'll eventually replace them. But the reality is that they're doing, I think, they've gotten the compete level so high that they're giving themselves a chance week in and week out. All right, let's go to Gary in Upper Marlboro. Gary, what you're our resident optimist. So what's your truth on this Monday?
I agree with just about everything you said, Craig.
I feel like there's a butt coming, Gary, or an accept. Which one is it going to be?
Oh, there's a big butt coming.
Okay.
And I complained on your show before about St. Juice. I think that those calls were ticky-tack. Yesterday, I give you that. Mm-hmm. But to say it's not his fault and you don't blame him for not being able to cover a guy, I mean, come on, this is professional football, all right? He needs, and this is something that he's done consistently. He gives up chunk yards like nobody's business. This is what his MO has been. When you get closer to the goal line, okay, or it's third and five or something like that, he can jam and he can be good under those circumstances, but in the middle of the field, he's horrible. And the stats show that. I mean, I don't think guys should be killing him today, but I think it's a lot of St. Juiced, misery. It's not just yesterday, but it's what we've seen with this guy over the course of his career.
Totally fair.
And
understood.
I don't think he's a number one corner. Be honest with you, I don't think he's a number two corner.
That's where I disagree, Gary. I promise I'll let you keep going in a second. But here's what I mean when I say it's not his fault. This is a guy who, at best, is a number two corner. Like, we can agree on that, yeah? He's somewhere, like, is he the number one, number two corner in the league? No. Is he a number two corner? At least, maybe. But he's being asked to be a number one. And some of the specific stuff he got beat on yesterday, like, he's having a, like, it's one thing to have to cover a shallow cross when you have to run with a guy for 5 yards. Chasing Zay Flowers 25 yards across the field because your blitzes don't get home, there's very few corners in the entire league that can do that. And that's where some of the stuff where they gave up some of this chunk yardage yesterday for that was on him. I thought there were bigger issues in the secondary yesterday. And people are going to point the blame at St. Juice because those two PI calls were so impactful in the game. But if you agree that there were bad calls, okay, well, let's take those off the board. What are the next biggest problems in the secondary? I would tell you the coverage of the linebacker yesterday gave a ton to be desired, and some of the big, big space, like that completion of Bateman in the middle of the field where there's no one within 15 yards of him. Part of that is because the linebackers are caught up in no man's land off a play action fake. Part of that is the safeties are their eyes are getting distracted. So I thought there was a lot bigger problems in the secondary yesterday than St. Juice if you take away those calls, which I personally do because I didn't think they were good calls.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand that argument. And you're right, there was a lot more going on in St. Juiced. But I think a lot of fans are just tired of seeing the same thing with him. I mean, he gives up chunk plays again. Like last year, that's his MO. He gives up a lot of chunk plays. But I agree with you on the GM. I was not big on Austin Eckler. I was not big on Zach Ertz, and I was completely wrong. I thought Ertz was washed up. I thought Eckler was washed up. But these guys are playing at a level that they played at when they were top of the league. When people, I mean, it's really good. I think Adam Peters gets an A+ for everything that he's done up to this point. And you're right. You can't fix everything this year. And Jonathan Allen, I do agree with you. I think he's played his last game with Washington. I think they need to move on from him and use that contract, that money for something else. But you have to be encouraged with the Commanders up to this point. I had them winning 5 games coming into this season. I think you said 8 or 9. I think you're right. These guys are playing a heck of a lot better than I thought. Now, they haven't beaten any world beaters yet. I think the teams that they played have been, you know, their records are not good, but they passed the eye test. And so I think you have to be optimistic at this point.
100%, Gary.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, you got it, Gary. Always good to chat with you, even when we spar a little bit. I think the thing too about where Washington is, and you look, oh, they haven't beaten any great teams. Like, we'll see what Cincinnati is. Obviously, they beat the Giants last night. Their offense looks really good. I mean, their defense looked good last night, but they're also facing the Giants. But I think Cincinnati could still pull themselves into the wild card picture. They obviously lost the 2 best teams they played. Week 1 was rookie debut for Jaden, and then they competed with Baltimore. But like, man, I was doing some stuff earlier today prepping for next week and doing our online pick show for next week that I do on Mondays on YouTube, and there's a lot of bad football teams, and the Commanders are definitively not one of them. Like, a lot of the league is the teams that they beat during the 4-game winning streak. It's a weird year in the NFL. Some of it is injury adjacent. Some of it is coaching and teams being kind of stuck in limbo. Some of it is like talented teams like the Eagles that just have their head somewhere up their own behinds. There's some good quarterbacks with really bad supporting casts, like in Dallas. Like, Dak's a good player. I don't know what they've done with their roster. Like, their roster's a nightmare. So there is a lot of bad football teams that I do think Washington is in a great spot, because I definitively don't think they're a bad football team. Like, if you don't play in the NFC North, you're kind of all right in every other division in the league. It's a weird, weird, weird year. The last thing that I'll say quickly about St. Juice is that if they could get some of the pass rush and some of the other stuff figured out, like, I think that they would be in a lot better shape on that. And I think that Baltimore deserves a lot of credit, because I think they were not uniquely, but they're one of these teams that has some stuff figured out on the offensive line, and some of the pass rush pressures and some of the calls they make. Like, you just kind of have to make some choices. Like, we're either going to dedicate the resources to the run, or they're going to run on us. We're going to dedicate the resources to the run. Okay, well, that means you're one-on-one on the back end, and you better get home on your blitzes. And Washington couldn't do that yesterday. It left St. Juice out to dry. It wasn't like he was losing instantly. It wasn't like he was losing by 15, 20 yards. No, he's getting beat by 2 yards. And in the NFL, that's open. Hopefully he can continue to do better. But I think that, like, I don't want to overstate it. I would say the other last thing about St. Juice, this is actually something I really wanted to point out from Gary's call. And it's on one hand, it's semantics, but on the other hand, it's really important. I understand the building frustration that a lot of the results feel similar, where last year it's like, this dude gives up chunk yards all the time. In the beginning of this year, he gave up some really big chunk plays that were his fault 100%. And I was like, man, is this just always how it's going to be with him, where he's in position and can't make a play? The last 5 weeks, really the last 4 weeks, but the last 5 weeks, even after that Tampa game, he has made corrections. He is playing significantly better football. And that yesterday, yes, he gives up some chunk plays, but a lot of that is like, hey, it's a deep comeback and you have no safety help and you have to guard against the go route. And the reason you're in one-on-one coverage guarding against the go route is because you are praying that your pass rush gets home. And if there's enough time to get the comeback off, if a dude has time to run 20 yards downfield, break off his route and break back to the ball, that's a pass rush loss. But what you can't do is give up the fade ball, where if the pass rush gets home and they just loft one up and the receiver runs underneath it. So there's things like that that are, I realize, are more nuanced. It's not what you want to hear. It's not very sexy. It's not very fun. But he is, like, it's not the same. He is playing significantly better football. And at times he's playing better football against players that are still better than him, and the teammates around him and the infrastructure around him is failing him, and thus he's still giving up chunk plays. But he is not just He's not freaking Santa Clausing chunk plays in the way that he did the last couple of years. Other teams are at least having to earn it, and that's what you want, is at least the competition level to be high, and he's got that, and the technique to be correct. He's got that, and now hopefully over the next couple of weeks, because he still is a young player. Like, he's still on his rookie contract in, what, his third year in the league? Maybe he can get even better. Maybe he starts making some of these plays. So I'm not selling all my BSJ stock, even though I realized that yesterday a lot of you, you're like, I don't have any left because I sold it last year. And I understand that too. 301-230-0980 is the phone number. We'll take your phone calls again coming up at 6:30. I do want to get back to the John Allen question later on in the show. Maybe we'll do that at 6:30. Do you think John Allen has played his last snap in Washington? But coming up next, we'll ask that very question and much more of Michael Phillips on a Michael Monday here on the Team 980 and always live on the free Odyssey app.